Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, where we discuss all things money because whether or not we like it, money matters. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French, and this week I was looking at the inflation figures, and I was wondering, you know, inflation came in, and I think at 5.2%, and there was also something called the owner's equivalent rent, and I was looking at all of this, and I thought, I'm sure that there is some value in explaining how our inflation is calculated, because I don't know about you, but my expenses seem to be going up a lot faster than 5.2% every single year. So I decided to do an article on it, and I interviewed Sanisa Pakarasamy, who's an economist at Momentum Investments, and I've written an article about it, but I recorded our conversation, and I thought that Sanisa explained the inflation and how inflation is calculated so well that I wanted to share our conversation with my listeners. So listen on to my interview with Sanisa.
It's been a while since we chatted, Maya, because I think the last time we chatted was probably one of our Cape Town meetings, and I think it was pre-COVID, and we used to still do those media sessions on our quarterly asset allocation and economics round. So it's been forever.
Well, I read your updates every month, so at least I get that. And I think for me, when I was reading the update this month that you did on inflation, you know, you wrote about the owner's equivalent rent and that that had gone down and that was having an impact on inflation. I thought, you know, I don't even actually really understand owner's equivalent rent. And if I don't understand that, most of the readers won't understand that. And I think then it took me to a further question of, well, how is our inflation rate calculated? Because I think for many people, when they see their inflation's 5.2%, they're like, wait a moment, my bills are going up a lot faster. I mean, just I had to put in electricity and prepaid electricity. And I can tell you it did not go up by 5.2%. So I think that's how many people feel. So I thought it would be maybe worthwhile unpacking a bigger picture of what goes into that Stats SA basket, and why would we possibly experience a different inflation to the figure that's coming out? And as part of that, explain owner's equivalent rent.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of how the inflation is calculated in South Africa, it's very much done on a global comparative basis. So the way that we would calculate inflation in South Africa is not unlike many of the other developed and emerging market counterparts. I think that's actually quite a good thing because we don't have a massively funded statistical body in SA, but they are still able to keep up with our global counterparts on how we do the survey methodology and to do it in the most robust way they possibly can, even throughout the period of COVID, where they weren't actually allowed to go out to stores, et cetera, and get a representative sample of pricing. They still managed to do it in a way that gave us a number that looked quite decent in terms of what to expect on the price increases. So just remember that the headline inflation rate or consumer price inflation, it is a statistical estimate. And in South Africa, of course, we have a very high level of inequality. So we have 48% of people that are sitting in what they call income decile 10. And you've got, you know, a much smaller percentage of people then that are sitting in the other various buckets. So in South Africa, you've got a very wide disparity on race, gender, income levels, rural versus urban, and all these things do have a big influence on the pricing experience that different people encounter day to day. So if you look at how inflation is calculated, it's basically telling you how your living expenses have shifted month to month and then ultimately year to year. So if you had 100 rand in your pocket this time last year and you have 100 rand in your pocket this time this year, it's basically saying how far that can that 100 rand take you. So maybe last year you could buy many more items relative to this year. The one thing that your inflation metrics don't really always take into account is your quality of the goods and services that you buy. So you may think, for example, if you bought, let's say a piece of technology, and let's say it's a cell phone that could do X, Y, and Z last year, but now it can do X, Y, and Z and A, B, and C, the price of that device has gone up, but you're also getting more benefit from that device. And that's not really accurately captured in a CPI measure. So your overall value that you're deriving from that product, even though the price has gone up, has also increased, but that's not adequately captured by a measure like CPI. Now, within your basket, there's a range of goods and services. So about roughly speaking, half of our basket is goods related and half of our basket is services related. When you look at the highly developed markets like a US economy or the UK or parts of Europe, they tend to have a bigger portion of their basket that is concentrated in services related items. So in SA, obviously your food and transport measures like petrol would fall into your goods portion of the basket. And then in your services portion of the basket, it is stuff like your insurance costs, your rental inflation, personal care costs. For example, if you're going to the doctor or the dentist, those costs would then go into your services portion of the inflation basket. Now, they take basically every 5 years, we get a reweighting of the CPI basket because some of the items that are in the basket that we used 5 years ago are maybe not used today. And they do it on a diary-based methodology. So they select a number of households. You actually have a diary that you capture in it for a period of 2 weeks, exactly what you've consumed, services and goods for that 2 week period. And then Statistics takes all of that information and then they calculate an average basket. So it's a sample representative of what people use in terms of goods and services in South Africa, again, across all income groups, whether it's urban or rural, different age groups, et cetera, different income levels. And that then becomes the average basket of goods and services in South Africa. They convert the prices attached to each of those items into an index. And then when you look at the index between different years or different months, you can calculate the inflation rate on that. Now, the
That's,
reason
I just want to
why.
go back. So that's quite interesting. I didn't realize that they actually went and asked individuals to complete, because you do think
Yes.
maybe sat there and sort of said, what do you think households are spending? So
So
every 5 years,
this is pretty interesting. Yes. So every 5 years that is reweighted as well. So for example, you might spend a bit more on maize meal and less on rice during, bad economic times, as an example, or you might buy more chicken rather than beef during bad economic times. And then in 5 years' time, when you're out of that cost of living crisis, you might see a bit of a shift in spending again. And so it's quite interesting. Or for example, some products just get outdated. So back in the day, we used to have, DVD players and CD players. We know that no one uses those now. So those items have been thrown out of the basket, whereas, items that we would now use more frequently become part of the basket. So I say, even though Statistics doesn't have an enormous amount of funding, it's quite, critical that we do an updating of the basket to ensure that it's representative of what people are actually spending on.
I think that's so interesting. It'd be interesting to go back every 5 years and actually do an analysis of what the bar, how much the basket's changed and what's changed. It must be very, very
They,
interesting. I
no,
think I'm going to
they
pick that up
actually
with
do
you.
that. So next year we will get a new basket. And so that will then show us which items would have been kicked out and which items will then be included. So it's always quite interesting to see, what people actually spend their money on. COVID was a very interesting time because people would have then spent a lot more money on gloves, sanitizers, and obviously that now has fallen, off that list. So we'll probably see some shifts again happening in terms of
And
what's.
less on entertainment and eating out because you
Yes,
couldn't leave
exactly.
your home.
Exactly. So
Yes,
your
that's
restaurant
very
spend, hotel
interesting.
spend, well, you'll see some shifts happening there. Now, I think, what you're saying is very valid. When people look at the average inflation rate that is published every month, it's not their own living experience because each person will have their own personalized basket of goods and services that they spend on, and that will differ from the average basket. There are also other elements that creep in. So, for example, if you look at the lower income earners in South Africa, a bigger portion of their spending goes towards your necessity goods like food. So even though food and non-alcoholic beverages are 17% of the total basket on average, if you are one of the bottom 30% of spenders in South Africa, that percentage is not 17%, that percentage is closer to 45%. And then, of course, that will then be a little bit lower when you are on the top 30% of spenders in South Africa. The same thing for things like transport costs, because as you get into the upper income earner metrics, they of course spend more on cars, as an example, and petrol, whereas your lower income earners would predominantly be spending on public transport. We also know in South Africa that your upper income earners and some of your middle income earners are more exposed to mortgages. They're more exposed to insurance costs, where a very large portion of your lower income earners and low to middle income earners don't have the exposure to insurance costs because many of their goods go uninsured. So those are our big differences. You also get a bit of a almost an anchoring bias. So, for example, we've just come out of the cost of living crisis where the war with Russia and Ukraine pushed up food and fuel costs predominantly. We also had the Middle East conflict, which was then an eruption of global supply chain trouble. So that added to, transport costs, insurance costs. That is in our living memory. So when we think about, prices being high, we anchor it to what our past recent experience was on price increases. And then you also get things like behavioral issues. So we would typically buy, food or refuel your car far more often than you would buy a new car or go to the dentist or, go to the doctor. And so if you are spending more frequently on certain items, again, your living experience on inflation can be distorted by the prices that you spend more frequently on. So I think those kind of reasons, the anchoring bias that distorts a bit of your prices, your behavioral biases that creep in, and the fact, if you are low income versus a high income earner, those three factors can then give you a very different inflation outcome relative to what the so-called average citizen in South Africa is experiencing. So your
I know
basket
that,
is
yeah.
different.
So I know, for example, that car, the prices of cars is in the inflation basket. Now, if you're only buying a car once every 10 years, you're obviously, and cars, I remember there was a time when car prices actually went down, right? They were actually deflationary. And that was having this sort of pull downwards on the inflation basket. But unless you were buying a car that year, you weren't, your inflation experience could be higher. And I know the electronic goods, it's the same thing. We're not necessarily going out and buying a laptop every year or a new cell phone every year. So it does depend how those less frequent items that are in the basket are playing out in the inflation numbers.
100%. And the car inflation has been quite interesting because we actually saw used car prices, that price inflation exceeding new car prices. And the reason being because the new cars that are coming into SA, a lot of your Chinese vehicles that are coming in at a lower pricing point, even though they offer the same type of add-ons, et cetera, that some of our other brands would offer. And so you're finding then to go and buy maybe a used, let's say it's a BMW or Mercedes, might actually be a bit more expensive than to buy a brand new, for example, Haval or BYM model that comes from China. And so that dynamic is also shifting in terms of the car inflation space because, and again, it's that technology advantage coming through. So you can get an item that has all the fancy add-ons and that's built into that price. And of course, we know that with the CPI basket, it doesn't necessarily capture all of your quality adjustments, but rather your price adjustment that comes through year to year. So the
And then
vehicle
how
inflation
does,
is very
so
interesting.
how do they then price the cost of a new car, for example? Do they say, well, do we track the BMW or do we track the Haval? Like how does Stats make that choice?
Yeah, so they would have a representative sample of a number of vehicles that would then go in. They would, for example, use the NAMSA database, which also then captures in all of your new vehicle prices. We also get, I think, the TransUnion used vehicle data. So that tends to correlate quite closely to what Stats SA uses on their numbers. In terms of like the retail factors, so if you think about Stats SA, they also do a number of other publications like retail sales. In that case, they basically look at your bigger retailers in South Africa. So it wouldn't necessarily include all of your smaller informal retailers. So there again, your representative sample focuses on specific areas of the economy and may exclude other areas of the economy. And that's again, it's because it's quite difficult for Stats SA to do a survey that's very extensive in some of the rural or informal areas relative to some of the more formalized urbanized areas.
And then what about when now when we come to things like this owner's equivalent rent? So I just picked that up. It was a th it's 13%
Yes.
of the basket. And I thought, just explain what is that?
So back in the day, we actually used to look at CPIX. It was a measure that they used, I think, pre-2008. Now, CPIX was basically a measure that used to incorporate what was happening on the interest rate and was far more linked with what is happening on your mortgage expense. Since then, they've then moved to this model where they're looking at actual rentals for housing and owner's equivalent rent. So typically, when I think about rental inflation, I'd lump the two together. So it's your 13% plus another 3 or 4% that you would add to that. Now, your owner's equivalent rent basically says the house that you are living in, whether you've got a mortgage or it's paid up or whatever the case is, if you had to rent out your own place, what would that rental inflation look like year to year? Then they also capture things like rental yields, and they incorporate that into the calculation itself. Now, because the housing market has been as soft as it has been, you find that, the number, your housing sales, for example, are down. If you look at the year-on-year increase in your home prices in real terms, it was down for quite a number of years. So that also then translates into very weak rental activity. We also saw for quite a period of time, there was almost an overhang of supply in the rental market relative to the demand out there. And that basically suppressed price increases that were happening in the rental space. And so for some time now, we've actually had rental inflation that has been underperforming your overall headline inflation number. So that's how they get to the OER number. It's basically saying if you had to rent out that property yourself. Now, they also gives a little bit of data across your income earning deciles 1 to 10. And it tends to be that in between income earning decile 4 and 8, that's essentially where your housing cost, and now I'm taking in your OER, owner's equivalent rent, actual rentals for housing, and all your housing utilities. So things like your electricity costs, your refuse removal, the water cost rates, etc., lumping all of that together, that's where you get to almost a third of the basket. So around that 33-34% of your total basket. When you go into your lower income deciles, most often these are people that are living in affordable housing or in informal settlements where they're not really paying rent on a regular basis, for example. They may get free electricity, free water use, concessions on things like rates, etc. So that brings down your housing and utilities as a percent of the basket. So in that, 1 to 3 sort of income decile, it can be as low as 14, 15, 16%. Then you get into the 4 to 8 income earning deciles where it gets to the 20, 30%. And then right at the end of the spectrum, your income earning decile 10, because there's a share of their total income, they are earning more. So the percent that goes towards housing cost then drops again. So you get a bit of a bulge in that curve. So that's essentially how your rental costs will then differ. But I think, we need to remember that a very large portion of South Africans can't afford to take out a mortgage. And so that rental cost is then quite different for that portion of the population that may be getting free utilities, etc. And that actually brings down their share of housing costs as a total of their basket.
I mean, I know certainly people that I know renting. I would say that many people are spending about 30% of their, but I think that does then include the water, possibly water. I don't know about electricity, but I mean, people, it is an incredibly expensive part, a big portion of your spend. So I was quite surprised to see it as low as 13 in the basket.
And that's definitely what comes through. So income earning deciles 4 to 8 and maybe even possibly 9, a good 20 to 35% of that basket is spent on that. But if you'd had to take the average, because again, it's the statistical average of your inflation, then we come down to those 14% plus the 3-4 for your actual rental. And then you also get your electricity cost, which is another 3%, and your water cost another 2%, etc.
I mean, it would be actually quite interesting to look at what is CPI for 4 to 8. That segment of society, because that's probably the most, the people listening to this podcast, people who are sort of engaging with us are probably in that segment. And it would just be interesting to understand how different that is from the average. And maybe that's something you and I can pick up and actually have a look. Because I think it is, like you said, we look at these numbers and we think, oh, this isn't my reality at all.
So we've seen a very big discrepancy in the inflation rate experience between your low income and your high income earners in the last while, because the cost of living crisis was effectively born out of high food prices and high fuel prices, which filters through into your public transport. So your lower income earner, their inflation rates for a big portion as we came out of the COVID-19 crisis was between 2 and 3% higher at some stages than your upper income earner. We know that services inflation was actually quite suppressed in South Africa, very different to what you saw playing out in the US and Europe, because right now inflation is still above central bank targets in the US and Europe because services is now catching up. They had a wage price spiral. In other words, workers saying, food costs have gone up a lot, our transport costs have gone up a lot, so must our wages. And so wages then adjusted, and it becomes, a self-fulfilling cycle that you get another round of inflation coming through. Now, in South Africa, we didn't have wages actually matching what the cost of living crisis did. And so we didn't have that, big wave of second round inflationary pressures coming through. And so services inflation was quite suppressed here. Again, like the rental inflation that we just spoke about being, well below the headline measure of inflation and taking up a huge chunk of the total inflation basket, things like insurance costs, et cetera, suppressing inflation on your high end. But with food and fuel being such a big component of spending for your lower end, their lived experience on inflation was significantly higher. We're now starting to see that rectifying because, of course, food inflation has come down quite a lot. And we also saw with your petrol price inflation, that's also come off, reasonably high bases that were created last year. But
And
again,
we're going
that's
to
a
see big inflation
right.
on insurance. So we're starting to see big insurance premium increases coming through because just claims. And I'm sitting here in Cape Town and it has not stopped raining for weeks and the floods. And there's always some chaos drama that's going on. So I think that's going to be interesting to see that inflation come through.
And we saw
But
a little
thank
bit of
you.
that even on the medical aid inflation, because during the COVID years, there was some reprieve on the increase that would have come through on medical aid inflation. If you look at the very long term, and long term, like from 1960 data on inflation in South Africa, medical aid inflation on average was about 9%. So that's, 3% higher than your upper income, than your upper band on your inflation target range. And then, of course, we hit that period where there were no increases in premiums, et cetera, and then it adjusted again. So once it adjusted, of course, that came in, and it came in quite swiftly for your upper income earners. So at the same time that, your food and fuel price costs were coming down, helping your low end, you had the insurance costs picking up for your high end. And so that gap between inflation on your low end and your high end then started to meet somewhere in between.
And of course, interest rates are not reflected in the CPI at all. So it's not showing the pressure that's coming through from higher interest rates. And I think obviously people with asset finance, cars, houses, they were really hit because, when you go up 500 basis points on a million rand bond, it really hurts. But I think people need to also realize that that's also the experience of higher expenses, but that's not going to be captured in the inflation basket.
100%. So you get other measures such as the default rate on the various loans that consumers take out. And what has been quite interesting is that in the last while, the default rate on your mortgages has been higher. So if you have maybe a car loan, a house loan, maybe you're running an overdraft or credit card, you tend to default a bit more on the mortgages in South Africa because it's quite difficult for the bank to actually repossess a home. And they don't get their full value when they then have to sell that repossessed home in the market. So it tends to be that, banks will try and find some way to restructure your repayment terms, et cetera, a little bit more leeway, other than trying, defaulting, for example, on your overdraft or defaulting on your credit card. So it tends to be that the consumers would pay off your other forms of debt before kind of getting to the mortgages. But you can see that stress coming through with high interest rates then biting into your ability to repay the mortgage.
It's such an interesting one because you'd always think, well, people don't want to lose the roof over their heads, but actually they're quite smart because if you default on your credit card, they stop access to your credit card, right? And now you can't keep using your credit card and you may need that to get by. And then if you default on your car, they're quite quick to take vehicles, repossess vehicles. So you're like, well, what's the thing they're probably not going to come after? So it's actually quite an interesting one that, people are smarter than they realize. When I first looked at those numbers, my instinct was, people don't want to lose the roof over their heads, but of course they know they're not going to. Very easily. It can take three,
I also
four
thought it was
years
a
for a
bit
repossession.
counterintuitive, but it makes sense when you think, the trouble that the bank will have to go through to repossess that property and then resell it in the market. And also, you've seen that the credit card usage has gone up in the latest while, and that's because people are just trying to meet their cost of living expenses, and so trying at, any means, to be able to get that additional income to pay for their normal everyday living expenses.
Great. Well, this has been fantastic. And I think you've done it. You've unpacked this so well, and so simply. And I really, really appreciate
Thanks
that.
so much, Mike.